Well, happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome to the last Wednesday of the month. And you know what that means? It is all about multi-site. Super pumped about today's conversation. It's a little predictions episode. You're going to love it. But I also want to remind you that today's episode is brought to us by our good friends at Portable Church Industries. And they are all about multi-site. They're helping churches like yours. They've been doing it all a year long. They're going to do it all next year. And they would love to talk to you. In all likelihood, your next campus will be portable. It'll be in a school, a movie theater, that sort of thing. You need to talk to Portable Church Industries. They do everything from system design to build, from the audio visual stuff all the way down to the simplest pieces. Listen, you need to drop by portablechurch.com/unseminary. That's portablechurch.com/unseminary. They have a multi-site timeline checklist. This really does walk you through everything you need to know to launch a new campus. I really wish this was around 13 campuses ago when I was launching. I'd love for you to check out that resource. It's free. It's available today. Drop by and pick it up. All right, let's jump into today's episode. Let's go.
You're listening to Unseminary's All About Multisite podcast. Are you launching another location and not sure where to start? Do you already have a few campuses, but they're not thriving as much as you'd like? We've gathered industry-leading church leaders to help answer all of your multisite church questions. Unseminary, stuff you wish they taught in seminary.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Unseminary podcast. It is the very last, actually, this is the last thing we're doing for this entire year. We are slaving away here at the end of December to help our Unseminary listeners. Welcome to All About Multisite. This is our conversation once a month where we talk about, you guessed it, multisite. And so I'm super excited to be here today with our guests. We do this every month. We take your questions and we wrestle through kind of issues of the day around multisite. Well, today we're doing something a little bit different, but before we get to that, let me introduce our guests. First, we've got Natalie Frisk. She is our family ministry expert. She works at the Meeting House, incredible church. They have 19 locations. Who knows? Maybe there'll be another one next year. She does a killer job on their kids and youth curriculum. You should make sure you check that out. She's a lot of fun. Love having her on the show. The question I have for all of our panelists today is, what is your favorite non-Christmas memory from this year at your church? What's yours, Natalie?
Well, it is a great question, and it is a big question. I actually, in order to answer this question, had to scan back through all of my Facebook posts and some pictures to kind of prompt my memory a little bit. What has happened this year, which was fun. I actually really thank you for asking the question because it made me go back and look through a little bit. I've got a couple. One is just that we launched our very own kids music for the first time ever this year. And that's been a big kind of passion project for me to get some kids music out there. So,
cool.
So feel free to check it out on iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere you get your music.
Plug, plug, plug.
Yes. Yes. You can find us at the Meeting House Kids Music. But truthfully, the music is, was actually fully an album written by my brother, oddly nice. Enough. And he's just a really talented singer songwriter. And he took some of our big ideas for our kids and put them into music. And I love it. It's fun to me. And I think it's fun to kids. And so that was big. I think another sweet memory that's just fresh. I taught at a retreat a couple weekends ago, and I was the junior high speaker, and I haven't talked to straight on junior highs in a long time, just junior highs in their own world. And I loved it so much. The response and the freshness and the openness of junior highs is just like the best thing in the world. I had, after my first session I taught, I had a grade 6 boy come up to me, and he with the most earnest face you've ever seen said, "You've given me a lot to think about." And so when stuff like that happens, it's just like, oh, the best. I got to give a couple kids Bibles who had never had Bibles before. It's just so awesome to see kids hungry and seeking after Jesus. So that was just a fresh, awesome memory.
Yeah, that's so sweet. That's fantastic. Yeah. Good stuff. Well, we next have on our show Greg Curtis. He is our guest connections and assimilation expert. He works at Eastside Church in California. Fantastic church. And actually, last month released a killer runaway success video course that you're going to want to check out. But Greg, when you look back on this year, what do you say about, you know, kind of your favorite non-Christmas memory from your church this year?
Well, Rich, I would have to say it was a panel that Gene Apple, our lead pastor, did in the in a worship service. It was in our, really our fall kickoff. And he had, he asked the question, you know, is the God of all religions the same God? And is there really, you know, the popular culture is that, you know, all religions are really taught about the same God. It doesn't matter what religion you follow, what discipline or tradition or thought process that you follow regarding God. So he put a panel together, and that's been done before, but the results were kind of wowed me because he had an imam, a Muslim imam, and then he had a young rabbi, real cool guy. And then a Buddhist monk who actually studied with the Dalai Lama and written many books, and then a Mormon bishop. And so they,
because am I the only one that feels like that's the beginning of a joke?
Totally. And they all walked into a bar.
Yeah, totally.
But it, they, while they were sitting there, you know, they were there for five services for the weekend, you know, so these guys had to be together and none of them had met each other before. And two things happened at the end that make this my favorite moment in my church for the year is that by the end of it, the Muslim imam and the rabbi hugged each other on the stage. During the last service. Huh. And the Mormon bishop said he was representing all of them when they said that they could not believe how they'd been received by our church and that they loved being here. And then there was all these pictures from the backstage that they thanked Gene for setting that atmosphere, but our people just embraced them. And it was obvious, you know, the cool net effect that he was attending is that you found out that these are talking about a very different understanding of God, of you know, a very different thing. But it was in their mouths, you know, they said it. But the thing that was so beautiful was just seeing them all feel so welcomed by our church as a Christian community. And feeling very safe there and feeling very loved there, so much so that even though they never met each other, they started turning around and backstage, Gene put some of the pictures up on social media. They just started hugging each other, sharing their contact info. And I just thought that's just a good thing. And it left a mark with me and kind of is sticking out as definitely one of my favorite memories at church for the past year.
Oh, that's really cool. What a neat deal. I'll have to check that out online. Is there a video about that on Eastside? I'm assuming, right?
It was archived, but it was probably the first service that was archived and this connection between them evolved till the last service.
You know, kind of got better as it went along. Yeah, that's cool. Good. All right. Finally, we've got Ben Stapley. He is our communications and service programming expert. He's one of the most helpful leaders I know. He's a great guy. He's the weekend experience director. They're not services. They're experiences, people.
Oh.
At Christ Fellowship Miami. Fantastic leader. Ben, what would you say is one of your favorite non-Christmas memories at your church this year?
I've only been there for 3 months, so I'm going to have to cherry pick. But I was this past summer, I think it was 2 weeks into my stay on staff, we launched a baptism, a special baptism service at the beach, beach baptisms. Historically, we make that available at each of our campuses every month. So we see that. And so we didn't anticipate a big draw on that just because it's available all year long. Mm-hmm. And we kind of preached it in our message and we thought, oh, you know, we maybe get a 50, 100 people, 500 people. People signed up for beach baptisms, which was going to be happening in 2 weeks from that date. And so we got into scramble mode pretty quick just because we were not anticipating that type of response. So first of all, to see that response when the Holy Spirit like pleasantly surprises you is always a wonderful thing in ministry. Sometimes it can be a little calculated and, you know, okay, based upon our numbers, this is how many salvations we'll have this Christmas, which gets a little dry. And so when he surprises you, it's always beautiful. And then to see the staff pull together in that scramble mode and work as a team was a beautiful thing. And then lastly, I had a chance to baptize my daughter at the beach as well. My 6-year-old daughter came forward and she kind of understood the gist of it. Mm-hmm. And as parents, we're like, okay, I think she has enough theological understanding that we can do this in good faith and honor her heart's desire to proclaim Christ as her Savior. So for those three things, that's been a highlight so far for my time here at Christ Fellowship.
Oh, that's sweet. That's really sweet. Always a cool experience that when, you know, the times that my kids are baptized, looking back on it, those are highlights for sure. You carry with you for a long time. So That's pretty sweet for me. So folks that have been, not that people necessarily track my world, but we've been back at Kinexus Church in just north of Toronto in for the last couple of years. And so I would say my highlight from this last year was we finally launched a third location. So when I was here 10 years ago, we launched our first two, and then we took a 10-year hiatus. Now, I don't. It's not because I'm back in the church by any means, but we're back in the church, and so I'm so glad that we launched, and just really proud of the team there. The last two weekends, I got a chance to be a part, at the campus a little bit, and was helping with hosting and that, which was really fun to be there. And it's always fun in those early days at a new location. And so, I would say that has been a real highlight for me. Well, today's episode is a little bit different. And so normally what we do is we take a question from you, but actually today we're doing something different. We're going to start with actually the 2019 predictions. So, this is the time of year where we all look forward and say, hey, what do we think is coming in this coming year? And so I have got some real experts here. And so I want to tap into them and get their thoughts on predictions. I was thinking recently, I think I was trying to do the combined attendance of all the churches that are, represented here. And, I think it's pushing somewhere close to 25,000 or maybe more than that, somewhere in that range, which is a lot. And so, all the leaders who are on here see quite a bit and are tapped into not only what's happening in their church, but other churches. And so we're going to just kind of pass it around, kick around a little bit. So I'm going to lead off because, it's my podcast. So back off, friends, get off my front lawn. But my prediction for this coming year is I really do think that we're going to see two or three churches, name brand churches. So these will be the churches that everybody knows, are going to take a foray into some sort of virtual reality campus. So, the kind of Facebook Spaces is a 3D environment. There's a guy already who's launched actually a couple churches on there, a couple locations, literally called VR Church, DJ Soto, actually an old PA guy. I don't know if you knew that there. Ben, that he's from the Pennsylvania. And so he's launched a couple campuses. It's been actually amazing to watch, but I suspect that a couple kind of big churches are going to take a step into that realm this coming year and give it a whirl. I think that that technology continues to mature. It continues to, I think the thing that they've unlocked in Facebook Spaces that's different than, say, Second Life, that was kind of popular, say, 5 years ago, is Second Life was, it's kind of a big play was like, you can build anything. And then there was a virtual currency in there and you could turn around and sell that for other people. And they were really trying to sell it on this idea of it being virtual space that you literally could, kind of a land rush, get in there, build something, and then you could sell it to other people, which isn't really, the number of people that are entrepreneurs in the world is actually pretty small. There was a lot of people that made money in that, but actually more people are at the end of the day social and want to interact with other people. And so even for something like this, we could record this in a more social environment if we all had headsets on and were exploring, some sort of physical space together. So that's my big prediction. I know a number of years ago, Life Church actually did a Second Life VR campus, but I suspect that somebody, maybe them or some other folks are going to step out and do that as well in a more kind of social virtual reality environment, something like, Facebook Spaces. So there it is. There's what my first prediction. What do you guys think? And then we'll jump into Greg's first prediction, hear from him. Everyone's like, that's a crazy idea. I don't think that's a good thing. So why don't we just...
Oh, you want us to respond? I didn't understand.
Yeah, what do you think about the VR church thing?
I think it's interesting. The concern you kind of alluded to, it was just like the uncontrollability of it, which is the case of our churches. And I think until churches figure out, I think they will still be hesitant until we figure out maybe a little bit more of those controls too. Just alluded, kind of running rampant. That's my quick response.
Sure. Yeah, nice.
I think it's a great exploration. I think long-term, I could see a lot of advantages of it as far as connecting people who maybe for physical reasons can't get to church to be part of a church community. I think that'd be so amazing. And this is one of my predictions that I'm leaking part of right now, but I think with the epidemic of loneliness, that something like VR has a capability to really bridge a gap for a lot of people. Mm. So I like it. I think your prediction is a little early.
Ooh, a little early. I'd rather be early.
I think it's, you're always early, Rich, except for, you know, meetings in real life. I'm just kidding.
Exactly.
that's me. That's me. But I think it's a few more years down the path.
Nice. Good. All right, Greg, I'd love to hear, what are you, when you look forward to this physical, this coming year, when you look forward to 2019, it's coming around the corner, what do you see as a prediction of, you know, what might be on the horizon for us?
To kind of piggyback on yours, I think most of us as churches right now see ourselves as a physical presence in the community with an online expression, you know? And I think we're going to see a switch, and I know I'm not the only person saying this, that we're going to see a gradual movement towards many of us seeing ourselves as an online presence with a physical expression. Mm. And that shift in thinking is going to mean that we really begin to see ourselves as our online presence as a real, more of a front door and more of a real thing than what we've considered before. And that it, but we also have a physical manifestation. So for a lot of you, you're going to experience us online. And then, but we also have a physical expression. So as you want to come and experience authentic community, you know, or that kind of community, the physical community that here's an opportunity and they hear about those that show up. And this year we had a guy, in fact, Natalie was visiting our church when it happened, but we had a guy from San Diego named Clay who is, you know, I think he's in his 50s and he has some aging parents to take care of. So he can't really even go to church. And he, I think was just searching spiritually. So mm-hmm. he found us online and had been watching us for months. And Gene just shared the good news of Jesus and invited people to spontaneously be baptized that day. Hmm. And he felt such a tug on his heart that he knew his parents were okay. You know, they're aging. One has Alzheimer's, but he knew he had some care for it. So he got in the car and drove 2 hours from San Diego to where we were in Anaheim and made it for the last service. And I got to baptize him. Mm. We also had another gal from a city to just two cities away, watch the first service that day and then come for that last service to be baptized as well. But they had been experiencing us for a long, long time. We were, their relationship with us was an online relationship that was real to them. And it was part of their lives. But then when it came time, you couldn't be baptized through the screen, that mm-hmm. the physical expression became important. And in the case with Clay, he's gone completely through our Next Steps experience. And I said, dude, let me find you someplace close to you. No, I want to do that here. He went through the whole thing here. And now I found him a church and connected him about 12 minutes from his house. That's got some great resources for him. Well,
that's cool.
I got to say, being there for Clay's baptism, like it honestly just ruined me. I was there. The only person I know at the church is Greg, and he's doing the baptisms. And I'm standing in the audience, and I'm weeping, listening to this guy. And I don't know if I've ever experienced this so vividly, but I saw a physical change in his countenance from before his baptism and afterwards. It was unreal. It was so beautiful.
That's
amazing. That's sweet. Yeah. And so on that, and so it's intriguing to me. Like I would, so if I was going to predict and this is, if I was going to say like, hey, I wonder who's going to kind of mention this online thing, I would say, wow, maybe that's more of a Ben thing. It's more of a programming kind of thing. Mm. But it's interesting that you're seeing that as like kind of the first thing you'd love to lead off with. What do you think the implications are for that? It, you know, being that that's true, will kind of be more of an online experience. You know, what do you think the implications are of that for you in your area?
Let's see. A few things come to mind. One is that I'll be looking at my phone to assimilate people more. And what I mean by that is I get that when they watch it online, they have an opportunity to fill out the same cards that we do if they came virtually, but online. And I get those in real time as an email on my phone. So I look at my phone and I'll see it starting on Saturday night that here's somebody and I'll check it out. And even though I have it automated, like what's going to happen and who gets assigned what to these people, 10% of those who watch fill out a card on average. And I'm looking at this. And so sometimes I'll get it. And as somebody connecting people, this is new. I will look at that and I'll email the person, say, hey, I just saw that you watched. And I'm wondering if you would like to join us because of your prayer request in Next Steps tomorrow. I'm going to be, you know, and they go, wait, is this a form email? No, it's really me. And it's wow. me. And I'd love you to come. And they've showed up.
So it
creates a new opportunity that is just different. I think another thing I'm predicting that we'll see in light of this, that I think ties into it somewhere, is I think we're going to see next year more in assimilation in particular, more texting and less phone calling when it comes to follow-up. Mm-hmm. Is that I'm just learning real quick that even for me, if I get a phone call and you're not in my address book, I do not answer.
Right.
Let it go to voicemail. So you got people that they go, who's that? They don't answer. And then they listen to the voicemail. They go, oh, that's nice. But they're probably not going to take the time to write down the phone number, you know, or call, or, you know, do whatever. Mm-hmm. So they, what we're doing is using Google Voice, which keeps all of our you know, personal phone numbers anonymous because we don't know who all we're calling. And just texting, using the texting option, because, hey, I'm Greg and I'm from Eastside. And gosh, it was great to have you this weekend. And I was thinking about you and wondering about this. And you start a dialogue and they'll return that. Mm. And you get into some great dialogues and end up praying for them, landing the plane in some area. So I think that's another manifestation of this same thing that is meaning a crescendo of change in how we do things in 2019.
Interesting. I totally can see that for sure. I've always wondered. I wonder, it would be interesting to see the statistics on like the open rates on voicemails and then the time between the voicemail being left and it being opened. Because I have a hunch that time is that gap is growing longer where, you know, people will let voicemails linger, I think, for a few days.
I think you're right.
And I think there was a time where it was more like, oh, no, we're going to check that at the end of the day. But I suspect that because there are times where I leave a voicemail and then it's like 2 days later, I get a call back. And I think, oh, I bet you that person just heard that voicemail and are now, you know, following up. But yeah, that's interesting.
Rich, for the VR, I think just because the technology hasn't become ubiquitous yet, you know, and churches aren't early adopters. I think for me, once I see gamers integrate that on a regular basis, or people are watching movies in their in their homes through that experience first, I think the church can respond to it. But you know, we know the church are usually is not the early adopters of technology. So the fact that they culture at large has not adopted this technology to participate in experiences, I still say it is a couple years off.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that makes total sense. Cool. Great. Well, Natalie, when you think about your predictions for this coming year, what do you got? What are you thinking is kind of bubbling around in your brain?
Yeah, I'm going to continue on the kind of we've been talking about kind of online experience stuff. I'm going to continue on that train for a minute. And I'm going to just predict that there's going to be an increase with more than simply the adult teaching experience online. Mm-hmm. I think there's going to be a greater move towards just more content on a digital platform. I think we've seen it over the past couple of years with teaching pastors or other people making an increase on increasing the space, I guess, that they take up on YouTube and things like that. And I think we're going to continue to see that more. I think we'll see further online engagement for kids and youth when it comes to the church connection. I think kids are on YouTube more than anybody. In fact, if you ask a kid, you know, under the age of like 12 or 13 these days, what their favorite show is, they're going to tell you one of two things. I watch X show on Netflix, or they're not going to tell you a favorite show at all. They're going to tell you who their favorite YouTuber is or their YouTube channel. Right. So I think our further engagement in those spaces where kids and youth are is going to be vital. And I do see some churches shifting in that direction and seeing the importance there. So I think that we will see more online intentionality, I guess we'll say. Mm-hmm. And I also think I think cycling back a little bit kind of in the connection between Rich and Greg's predictions, I also think that the online presence as an on-ramp as an on-ramp to the physical experience is going to be something that the volume is cranked up on. People's first their first impression is no longer when they walk through your door.
Right.
We all know that. Their first impression is your website. It's when they Google, what do they see about your church? And so we need to really be steering in that direction. And I think that we're going to see a shift in more churches being aware of that. So I think we're going to see a lot more intentionality on websites and just the entire online experience.
Yeah, I think so. The thing, part of what I loved you mentioned, there are a couple things I'd love to kind of get your thoughts on. So for the most part, so churches, a lot of churches are seeing, you know, obviously the what's happening. My friend, Kerry Newhoff, you guys know him. Mm-hmm. He coined this a couple of weeks ago, and it's resonated well in the Twitter sphere, because I think we all feel it. He said, you know, the foyer has moved, you know, the lobby has moved. It's no longer, you know, it's no longer actually your lobby. It's all these other experiences. What is that looking like from a kid's point of view? How do you think we attack that? Are there people that are doing a good job trying to extend the good things that are happening from a kid's point of view into these, you know, whether it's on social media or it's in, you know, YouTube, that sort of thing? I know obviously you guys are doing it with, you provide all of that, but is that being targeted or used by adults, or are you really actually hoping that kids will stumble across it and see this as a lobby for your experience, for what you're providing?
Yeah. So I think there's a few different things you've asked there.
Yeah, sorry.
I'll go in a few different directions. So first, I would say when it comes to what is the lobby or the foyer for kids, the reality is that it is still the physical space, because mm-hmm. very few kids are going to go online and look at the church that their parents are taking right. them to on a Sunday, unless, and I know that my daughter has done this for different things. The kids are really hesitant or unsure, and the parents might say, here, I'll show you some pictures. Mm. And so having pictures of the physical space for kids online may be very helpful to just get the mm-hmm. that prep in there for kids who are hesitant to actually enter in. Some of the churches that I have visited over the last little while, I think about Crossroads in particular, mm-hmm. In Cincinnati, they have an amazing kids jungle gym. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I can't remember what they call it, but it's like this whole experience for kids. Having those kinds of spaces, I know Eastside, Greg, you guys have a great kids playground there as well. Mm-hmm. But for kids to see some of those physical spaces in advance is awesome. So I think having some of those pictures up on the websites can be helpful mm-hmm. for kids who are uncertain or want some, you know, information in advance when their parents are showing it to them, because that's the reality. But then further, when it comes to online content, I think we're beginning to shift in the direction of how and where are we putting content where kids are going to kind of stumble over it, even how we're tagging things on YouTube and things like that. So the hope is, yes, that kids are going to stumble into some of this stuff as they are online. The reality is that right now in our present scenario, most of the things are targeted towards either youth leaders or parents in how they're being found online.
Yeah, cool.
But I think parents are the primary bridge in that to begin with. But that if kids find a YouTube channel that they love, they're going to keep watching it. So right. if we can build things like that for our kids, that's a huge win.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, something you said there kind of tweaked me to an idea. I wonder if, you know, in kind of business to business transactions, there sometimes people will create these, you know, marketing pieces that are literally are designed to like, hey, give this to your boss if you want your company to buy this. And so it's like, you know, here's the deck or here's the PDF, and it's designed as like, hey, this is the tool to use to convince. I wonder if you could see churches doing a similar kind of thing where it's like, here's a video to send to your kids about what they'll experience about coming this, you know, to church, or like here, like you say, here are, you know, 8 pictures to send to a kid, you know, who might be coming this weekend, you know, is your, you know, child nervous about coming, you know, here's some stuff to send them, that kind of thing, to even help. So yeah. Cause I think a lot of parents obviously are still making that decision,
but
love their kids to be a part of that, would love their kids to be fired up for it.
Yeah. I must admit, there's this guy who, he's the executive director at a camp up north of Toronto. Yes. You may know him.
I don't know who that is.
He does don't tell him this because he'll get a big head, but but he does a really fantastic job of sending out videos and pictures in advance for kids visiting the camp. And I know I have a friend whose kid wasn't sure about going to camp. She really wanted him to go. He wasn't sure. She showed him one of those videos and he was like, yep, man.
Yeah, that's interesting, right?
Strangely, the tuck shop was the biggest sell for him. But, you know,
really I'm going to go buy things.
But I think it is a good example to us as a church of like, kids, if they're not sure and it's a big question mark in their mind, they're going to make it more difficult for their parents to go to church. And if kids are pulling back, parents may just say, forget it. And so for the kids to be engaged well and even leading the charge, that's a huge win, I think, for families.
Yeah. And we know like adults, 65% of adults are visual learners. And so we know that using images to draw them is important. I would suspect that number is even higher with kids.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and particularly I would think, and again, you're the child expert, I'm not, but the kind of concrete thinkers, them actually seeing a picture of like, oh, this is what it's going to look like, takes the abstract idea of like, hey, we're going to church this weekend to like, and that's why I think, and a number of churches have done that, the jungle gym, the whatever, oh, that looks like a great place to go. I'd love to go there, even though they don't actually do jungle gym all weekend when they're there.
Right.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Cool. What about you, Benjamin? You've been awfully quiet down there in Miami. It could be because the weather's nice and I'm bitter and cold here and I'm, you know,
I'm taking notes and learning. I'm just writing in what my ministry here is going to look like after listening to all you guys.
Would love to hear your predictions. What do you think? One or two of them. I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. The first thing I'll say up top is these are so fun because there's no accountability, right? We can say whatever we want.
So true.
And no one holds our feet to the fire. It's fun. I actually like went back to some other like ministry prediction trends for 2018. And it was interesting to see what was written last year. That did not come true. So I'll try to keep it true. Some things I'll just parrot or echo from Natalie's that I definitely agree with is that designing, making sure the even the weekend experience, it has a kid's perspective on it is important. I was talking to a lead designer from Chrysler Fiat this past month, had a chance to interact with this incredible designer. And I just say, hey, what have you seen in the from your perspective? He's been designing for 20 years. What's a big trend that you've noticed? And he said, just the increase of how we design kids for how we design cars for kids as well. Because when they come to the lot, almost at this point, what the vehicle they want is as important as the vehicle mom and dad wants.
I like
it. I know you love that. And I think obviously the cars have got ahead of that trend. Churches haven't, right? We still we designed the overall experience for adults, and they're just going to bring their kids along regardless of whether or not they want to be there or like the overall feel. So that's I echo that for sure. The utilizing YouTube is something else I would say. I think churches have underutilized that, even with end title cards. And how do you not just put content on that platform, but design it specifically for that platform? A lot of churches haven't cracked that nut. Those are some echoes. Something new that I would add in relationship to the technology aspect that we've been talking around is probably just an increase of social media from a staffing perspective. This is funny. I put it out there and asked some other friends out there, and they said, yeah, like that's not a trend. Churches have been doing that forever. So this is a bit of a spectrum, right? Some of the stuff is new and some of it isn't new. But overall, I'd say the majority of churches are going to move away from a volunteer-based digital designer or social media manager and put it in the hands of a staff member. Because for two reasons. First of all, they see the value in bringing communications to communities instead of just asking for the communities to come to the communication. So they see the value behind the tool. And then second of all, they see the need for professionalism, right? With a volunteer who's untethered, doesn't fully know the church DNA, doesn't know the operations, the day-to-day, can't make those quick pivots when things need to happen and change. It's hard to give that into a volunteer who's just giving 2 hours a week or maybe 5 hours a week and to say, you are going to be, we're giving you this huge megaphone, social media, and we want you to communicate to the, not just to our congregation, but to our community, but who we are. And so I see that as a huge shift, switching it from less volunteer-based and more staffing-based for churches across the spectrum.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. Like, I think, you know, the complexity of this area, the kind of data-driven nature of it, the, you know, I was talking to a church recently that ran a, and this is like where I'm hoping to get them on the podcast in the new year, but they talked about some unreal results on, you know, purchasing Facebook ads, using that in a super, you know, analytic kind of way, to narrow down on people's specific needs. So they basically were looking at intent, people's intent on social media, the things they're talking about, like, I am not feeling great, I am depressed. And then targeting ads towards those people that ultimately drive attendance, which I'm like, wow, that's unreal. That's beyond just the like, hey, find the 21-year-old who loves Instagram and let them take care of it. It's, you know, to actually drive results, I think takes a lot there. That's really cool. Good stuff. Mm-hmm. What about you, Greg? What's another prediction you've got when you're thinking about this, this coming year? And again, I love, Ben's caution there. You know, it's not, you know, these are fun episodes, but you're just never sure. But, you know, I know I'm going to look back at least next year and say, hey, what came true? But yeah, what about you?
Well, yeah, I'm definitely not the Nostradamus of church life, but I've been around for a bit. And I would say over the last 15 years, I noticed the increasing vulnerability of the mid-sized church, unfortunately, mm-hmm. meaning that more churches have become less than 100 and more churches have become over 1,000. Mm-hmm. And what that means is, you know, the people with community, you know, you have that really tight community familiar thing and churches less than 100 that a mid-sized church doesn't have anymore. And they are no longer able to, but they're not yet ready to provide the level of programming that the large 1,000 plus church has. Mm-hmm. So we've seen that mid-sized church become a little bit more vulnerable over the last 15 years. Mm-hmm. And so what I think now in 2019, we're going to start noticing cognitively more is we're going to see that these large churches are starting to look the same because they're missional and incarnational. They're wanting to engage the culture. And we've got a culture that is becoming increasingly global. Mm-hmm. And so even past our own culture, we're going to start to see large churches. They're going to be sharing because they're networked together, discoveries and everything, you know, from listening to podcasts like this one to other resources and conferences and books, et cetera. And so what's going to happen, and we're already starting to see it, is that if you go to North Point or you go to my church, Eastside, or you go to Saddleback or you go to wherever, you know, that you're going to see the large churches are doing what works to engage the culture. So they're looking very similar, regardless of their heritage, tradition, or denomination. Mm. It's like you walked into the same kind of church. Whereas when you go to the smaller churches now, which are the, you know, obviously there's many, many more of those, is that they will keep their cultural traditional distinctives for a lot longer. And you'll just notice that the smaller churches have much more distinctiveness. Mm-hmm. And the bigger churches are almost as if they were all planted by the same organization. And I think we're going to become more cognitive of that shift. And then another prediction I have that is going to stand almost in irony to what I just said is that you're going to see more scalable solutions rather than one size fits all. Mm. But I think that also is what necessarily has to happen. If what I'm saying is true, is that when people have, will give a resource to the church, it will have to be something that can fit in that small church of less than 100 and help it, nourish it, grant it more health, but be totally usable and scalable in the large church of environment. And, that's one of the reasons just now I'm releasing this Climbing the Assimilators video course with that in mind, because anything we've got to share has to work even in a different culture, much less the context of size. Right. And I think that the solutions are going to have to become, since there's always going to be more of the smaller churches than the large, they have to transcend style, and they have to transcend size. They've got to be scalable mm-hmm. solutions, or they're just not going to sail anymore. Where in the past, this was marketed to big churches, or this was only for your church on the corner, smaller kind of thing. And mm-hmm. so I think that we're going to see that the scalable solution is going to be become increasingly more commonplace in 2019.
Hmm. Yeah, it is interesting that the kind of blurred distinctiveness, I think, you can see that. It just this, it was a couple of weeks ago now, I visited a church that I'd never been to before. It's kind of quite close to where I am. And it's across the town from a church that I've been in a lot. And it's so, you know, it's kind of like one big church. They're both these churches are running probably 5,000 people. And I've been in the other one, you know, quite a bit, and I'd never been in this other one. And the first time I went and walked around it. And I know we're talking about just, this is just talking about the actual physical space. But I was walking through the physical building and I was like, wow, it is amazing how this similar this feels. Like it's like church on the other side of town, similar kind of built in a box feel. You know, and some of that I think makes sense because it's like a model. It's like, hey, there's some, you know, we all end up, you know, in a similar kind of model or a similar approaches. But, you know, what is that doing to us long term? I think is an interesting question. That's interesting. Cool.
I think it's also going to make anything that's different or unique about our church stand out even more.
Right.
You know, that if there's, and it won't, it'll be a subtle thing, you know, not the big stylistic or operational things. It'll be, oh, they're the church that has a steeple. Or they're the church that it'd be like something, a little bit more micro and not macro in its expression.
Yeah. And I think, and I don't know, this may be going out of, you know, this may be, I mean, we need to cut this, Natalie, but you know, there's interesting because, you know, the Meeting House is a Anabaptist church, has theological distinctives that I would say are actually, they're actually distinctives. Like they're like, there's beliefs there that are, you know, that are different. And one, and East Side is similar, right? East Side has, you know, some theological distinctions that are, you know, that are different than kind of just, I will call it like Wheaton evangelicalism, whatever that is, that kind of middle of the road evangelicalism. And stylistically, there's some similarities there, but there are some significant kind of theological differences. And how has, and that I know has been, you know, has impacted the Meeting House for sure. Mm-hmm. How do you think about that distinctiveness issue there, Natalie, when you think about those issues?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's interesting though, because I think there, while we have our distinctives and while we are very overt about our distinctives, I'd say the distinctives at present are ones that speak so clearly into our current societal context, that people are actually drawn because of them. And even people that have grown up in an evangelical sphere have been drawn. They hear about peace, the peace of Jesus. And when they hear about it, it's kind of like a conversation that may be limited to them as an individual. They come into our context and we talk about peace and reconciliation and they're like, oh,
right.
And you know, living simply so we can give generously. Like a lot of our distinctives, I think, are just so timely right now.
Right.
That it's actually been a benefit and and I would say, for the most part, hasn't drawn significant lines between us and other churches as far as those churches that would seek resources from us, if that makes sense.
Yep. No, that makes sense.
Yeah. Does that answer your question, Rich?
Yeah, I think so. I think the it's been interesting to watch. So obviously I have like a heart, like, you know, I would call myself Anabaptish and with great pride and
I'm still praying for you.
I'm still praying that I'll convert for you. And enough that obviously I worked at the Meeting House and we're like fully supportive of that and actually love the Meeting House and send people there all the time. Think it's incredible. And it's always funny to me to see what I would say more kind of middle, like standard, again, I don't know what you call them, Wheaton evangelicals kind of standard, maybe a little bit more reform, whatever. And they're like, they get worked up about the Meeting House. And I'm always like, really? That's fascinating to me because like, they really love Jesus over there. And like, they really love the Bible. And like, the distinctives, I would, from my perspective, although they're really core, it's this weird thing. Cause I feel like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth. In one sense, I'm like, it's not really that big of a deal. Peace, simplicity, and community is amazing. Mm-hmm. I don't know why you would get worked up about that. It's like, why are you? So anyways, it's interesting. And I do think as we grow, it is interesting to me that there are like, it's like whatever you call the kind of rock band church, it's like you go from community to community, and there is a lot like that, that it feels very similar.
There's a lot of the, fog machines and skinny jeans going on and a lot of the big,
dude, that's the sound bite.
There you go.
Yeah. But like in our tradition, you know, our tradition is very obsessed with first century Christianity. So we take communion every week and not every church does. That's one of our distinctives. Mm-hmm. And so I think people may notice that, oh, we take communion. Oh, that was part of my tradition growing up in a liturgical church or whatever. But because it's in the context of this thing that most missional churches have locked into that's engaging the culture, it's not noticed. It's notable, but in a much smaller way, mm-hmm. you know, much smaller way.
Yeah, it's. I've been helping doing some coaching with a, you know, with the Christian church in Omaha, who, and I've been helping a little bit on the service programming side. And, you know, early on, I asked the question. I was like, "Hey, so this communion every week thing, like, you know, what? Just give me a sense." I was talking to the lead guy. I'm like, "Just give me a sense. Like, how big of a deal is that? You know, like if I." You know, what if we decide not to do it 1 week? Oh, yeah, no, that's not really an option, which is great. And right, obviously, and I deeply respect that. And, you know, it does create some interesting programmatic, as someone who hasn't come from that, you know, tradition, mm-hmm. it does create, mm-hmm. you know, some interesting programmatic changes. And then the same on baptism, there's a theological distinction there around baptism that has, in this particular case, has driven more, less away from portable, more to permanent, because it's like, we don't want to have there to be any delay on people getting baptized. And which I obviously think is amazing. It's fantastic. And so, yeah, it's interesting. I think for people particularly, I think there's a real advantage there for people who, again, maybe looking for something slightly different. I think it actually is more of a, it's more of a positive thing than negative for sure. So that's interesting. Yeah. Appreciate that, Greg.
Yeah. That's one of the things, Rich, just to tag on that. The one of the things I had as well was that distinction, or like in the business framework, it's like, what's your market advantage? What makes you different than the competitor?
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Is it just a Coke or Pepsi, or like what is actually different with your experience than the one down the street? Mm-hmm. And the prediction I had from that, coming out of that, because I completely agree, is I think I will see less multi-site churches trying to go across state lines.
And brother. Amen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The reason being is that I think we just had grand ambitions that we can go anywhere across the country. And they're winning.
I love what Eastside's doing.
Because of that, where I think we're now noticing, no, we're not aware of it, right? There are mm-hmm. regional issues and distinctions that we have. And then when we try to export it a couple of states across, we see that it falls flat or it doesn't work as easily. And so I think churches are going to scale back from that to a healthy degree and just really better understand who they are, what they're trying to do, who their target audience is. Mm-hmm. Because of that, stay a little more regionally located, instead of having that national ambition that, you know, we're not a successful megachurch unless we're in four different states. So that is a bit of a trend. You know, I think there's some like churches that buck that, you know, obviously like Life Church bucks that with the 30th campus or whatever it is. But even with them, they're looking for like a Life Church like community to plant into to make sure it feels on brand. And I don't know if every church has that option to do that.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like I know obviously Eastside has campus way far away, and you know that's a unique story. I think the thing I love about churches that have tried that a lot of time, that where it's working, it tends to be that where it's like kind of some sort of fluky thing that we fell into, where the Life churches who are strategically doing that, I do think a lot of times we look at that as being like, oh my goodness, that's the way it needs to go. And I just mm-hmm. don't know. I think that's more the exception rather than the rule. I think a lot of our churches do have a regional, and you could actually be giving up more regional impact for mm-hmm. trying to reach people way far away. Like, I love what your church has done with, you know, obviously in Miami and then in Latin America and the Caribbean. That is like, so it's like one cultural milieu, right? Like that's all, you know, I think has a, you know, a similar value to it. I'd said the same to Tim Lucas at Liquid, where, you know, at mm-hmm. one point he had aspirations, the same kind of thing. And I was like, Tim, like, I think you lose something when, you know, when you stop speaking about Jersey specifically and stop speaking about the Northeast more broadly, when, you know, people in Jersey, they love it when you make fun of Boston. As soon as you start wanting to do a campus in Boston, you have to stop making those jokes. And you lose something from a communication point of view. You give something up there. And you know, and they're doing a South Jersey campus. I think that's public. Hopefully I didn't just out that. He's gotta watch that, because there's North Jersey, South Jersey. And there's North Jersey.
Creek Rapids in 2000, across a couple state lines there. We said no to all but one of our campuses. We were approached to be, you know, to franchise, for lack of a better term, a campus. And we said no to that for obvious reasons, three different times, emphatic no's. And, but they felt such a calling, and it is our fastest growing campus. It's now, because it was probably the smallest church, it was 30 people in Park Rapids. It's now the largest church of Park Rapids, and in 3 years. And it's, but I think it ties into what I was sensing, you know, prediction wise, the idea that the churches that are missional are going to be starting to look the same as they're growing larger churches. There's a similarness, which ties into that other idea I was having about the solutions are having to become scalable and transcultural, or they're not solutions anymore. And so if that's the case, if the scalability factor becomes more and more on the increase in 2019 and beyond, it's going to be so that things can really hop all kinds of ethnic, social, political lines, whether state, rural, urban, or otherwise, because we're in a new world where things are becoming global and our faith is looking like a movement again instead of an institution. So
yes.
Very cool. That's a good thing. Natalie, I don't want you to, I know you've got other predictions. What else are you thinking about?
I'll do them quick here. Based off of that, that last line was brilliant. Faith is looking more like a movement again. And I think that actually speaks to a couple of my predictions. One, I think that I don't know if I fully agree with you guys per se on multi-site churches. I mean, there are more
it's not
multi-site churches moving across state lines. What I think is going to happen is we're going to see an increase in like cities and regions being connected as churches. That they're like the continual look beyond denominational lines to do things together. I live in Hamilton, Ontario, and we have this phenomenal organization called True City, and their tagline is churches together for the good of the city. They've just invited me to be on their leadership team. And so I'm extra passionate about that right now, but I've always been passionate about Hamilton and the way in which churches have worked together in brilliant ways. What it has done and what it has meant for the body of Christ in Hamilton has been beautiful. I think we're going to see more of that in different cities, specifically kind of mid-sized cities across the North America. The post-denominational kind of viewpoint, while we recognize the need for denominations for a variety of reasons, I think churches and the actual community members of those churches are going to be looking beyond denominational lines for a lot of different things to kind of link arms. So I think that's one. And I think the other has to do with the idea you guys mentioned about multi-sites not crossing state lines, et cetera, province lines in my case. that what I actually think we may see is that shifting from what we have come to know and love as a traditional multi-site model to something that's a little bit more resource-based driven. So what I mean by that is we've got Eastside and they are brilliant and they have so many amazing resources and so much to offer the kingdom. What would it look like for Eastside to resource other churches that maybe don't want to be Eastside, but want to glean from what they are doing and take some of their, you know, Greg's assimilations program into their church context and use it. And I'm curious to know and see and believe that it's going to happen, how kind of resource hubs kind of churches, you know, really provide for the body of Christ in different ways. I think that when it comes to those resources, we're going to see an increase in clear, cohesive resourcing for the spiritual nuns and beyond. I think we need to get to a place where we are resourcing really well for the spiritual nuns. And I think that is going to continue beyond. I think we're going to see a bit of a resurgence in some really clear, classic discipleship materials. I would wager a guess, and I have absolutely no statistics on this, wish I did, I think that what I would consider kind of like my generation, where the Gen, wait, Rich, what are you? Are you Gen X?
I'm Gen X, man. Yeah. 1974.
Where the Gen X's end, and then what is after Gen X?
Millennials.
Millennials. Before, I know. I was scared to say it. Where Gen X end and millennials begin, kind of in that. That's where I hover between those.
You're
two.
Right on the fold there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think that those in my generation, and I would guess maybe a little bit before, a little bit after, that we kind of were a missing generation, where a lot of people in my age bracket left the church.
Yep.
And are kind of sauntering back in now as parents, mm-hmm. and really genuinely trying to figure out how to disciple their kids in an authentic way that is mm-hmm. different from the way that they were discipled growing up, but is true to their experience. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's going to be a lot of parents relearning how to disciple their kids, and also what it looks like to be discipled themselves in that time. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a combo with that, and the spiritual nuns, where resources are going to be needed. And I have no doubt that when resources are needed, that they will be found quite quickly.
Right.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah,
that's good. Anybody other thoughts on kind of this, you know, post-denominationalism, you know, because I do think that's a, you know, even just what we were talking about earlier, you know, this, hey, I'm, you know, helping with churches. I help with all kinds of different churches at On Seminary. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's, and that does feel like more even acceptable or like great than it was even 10 years ago when I started doing this stuff. It's like, people seem more open. You know, there are folks who, you know, I've spent most of my time in, we'll call it the attractional church side of the world. And, you know, I get increasing amount of phone calls from folks that would be more on the kind of, and have spent a lot of time in, you know, churches that have done, say, more of the kind of needs-based, you know, teaching and that. I have increasing number of phone calls from churches that would be like verse by verse through the Bible kind of churches. And they're like, hey, we want to learn more from that. Like, we think there's something to that, but if you could just not talk about it publicly, but I do want to actually, you know, learn more about that. And so, which I think there's something to that. And anybody else have thoughts on kind of the post-denominationalism or this resource issue?
I don't know how it plays itself out, but in terms of Hillsong moving towards, I think that there was this past year that they, you know, officially became their own denomination. I think that's like fascinating how, you know, something, a grassroots movement can grow into something that large. And so I think there's a potential for other churches to do that, for other, like, you know, quote unquote networks to officially become a denomination, mm-hmm. or churches just move away from their denominational affiliations and saying, we're comfortable to be part of ARC or this church network or that church network. I mm-hmm. think those lines are blurring, and the, maybe the overall, yeah, I think they're blurring. I mean, I think they're going both ways. Networks, some networks are moving towards denominations, and some mm-hmm. people who have denominational backgrounds are moving towards a network philosophy. And I think it's got benefits for wherever people are on the spectrum. Mm-hmm. It seems to be a lot more fluid than it was in the past. And I think that fluidity is just going to increase.
Well, what I think is people are asking more and more is a question I'm asking myself a lot as I do these base camps with church staffs, or I had to create this video course I just did. And I'm asking this question, not what does Eastside do that we can give away so that other churches could do it too? I had to ask the question, what are the principles that drove us to create what we created that we can give those principles away so other churches could maybe even create something better than we did and we can learn from them? So, and if the principles are what we're talking about, then when we see that principle in action and expressed in a beautiful way in some other context, and we go, oh, look at that. And that's what makes it transferable, is the principles that we're expressing in a particular, you know, program or strategy that we're working at our church, and to showcase the principles and really highlight that and drive it and share multiple expressions of it and examples of it so that people can either make what we do their own or come up with something their own that we could learn from. And I think that's part of what's going to happen in an increasing way.
Totally.
Even next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's an interesting, 'cause I would say, I am firmly not anti-denominational. Like I don't think, and there are people out there who love that, like that they're like, oh, they're like terrible, like down with denominations. I don't actually think that's not where I'm from. I would say I'm more in like kind of like it is more of that kind of, which is just such a stupid thing to say, but this kind of post-denominational idea that like I love working with people from a wide variety of backgrounds. And I think that actually the variety of that, there are backgrounds actually is like really beautiful. And I don't think we need to kind of blend into one big thing and then there are increasing things on the horizon. And that was probably 3 or 4 years ago. I did an interview with a guy named Jonathan Manifaux, happens to be a Canadian. Like he planted a church with actually two denominations. Now I joked with him off air. I was like, good for you getting two different denominations to fund you. But that's what it is. And so his church is actually two, and they're like, it's not a network. It's not an association, two literal denominations. And so when people ask, he's like, yeah, our church is a member of these two groups and we love them. Which is amazing to me. I'm like, there's probably more of that coming, as we try to figure out, you know, what's next.
Yeah.
I had one other prediction. So I'm going to be the Debbie Downer. And, so when Village Church, when they started the process of un-multi-siting, so they were a collection of churches who then decided, hey, we're going to, you know, pull apart and, you know, we're going to be independent, you know, locations. It's interesting how, so that did change the bit of conversation. You know, I know emails that I was getting were from, you know, some lead pastors and executive pastors saying like, I kind of feel like that may be us, like maybe we need to back out of this thing. And I do think that we're probably going to see a bit more of that in this coming year, that there'll be a few more very large, you know, public, you know, un-multi-siting of churches. And part of that is driven by, it's just really hard to do. Like the fact that, and you know, for folks that are listening in, the folks that are listening to this part of the episode, you're like our hardcore fans. And we get, you know, we this whole thing is based on, hey, help us, you know, send in a question and we'll answer your question. So basically all the questions we get are the same question, which is, how on earth do you get campuses and central people to work together? And that inherent tension is pushing multi-site churches apart. You know, it is, it's just frankly easier. And I don't think it's not necessarily better, but it's easier for kind of churches to go their own ways. You know, from a leadership structure point of view, you know, so much of our leadership training is still built around pyramids. It's this idea that like, you're going to kind of ascend up an organization and eventually you're going to be at the top of the organization and every decision you're going to be able to make. But actually multi-sites are a matrix by definition where, you know, every, you know, if I'm in guest connections in a campus at Eastside, I've got to worry about not only what Greg thinks, but then I've also got to worry about what my campus pastor thinks. And so from a leadership point of view, that creates inherent tension between, and this is, I'm just using this as an example. I'm sure there's no tension at Eastside, but you know, that creates an inherent tension between say folks in the central roles like Greg and campus pastors. And that does pull apart at its core. And so, I know for me, I find myself increasingly saying, which is a little bit, people probably don't like it, but I increasingly, when campus pastors or churches with like two campuses come to me and say, you know, like they're struggling or whatever, I just flat out say to them, listen, if you're not going to launch more campuses, you probably should stop being multi-site. Like, why are you doing this? Like, you're just creating problems. Why? So, and I'm hoping that will goad them into planting more campuses, will goad them to like, why are you doing all this hassle figuring out how to do this in two locations? Why not just do it in 10? Because it actually does get easier as you get to 4 or 5, and it gets more complex as you get beyond 10. But, you know, you get over this hump and move on. But I do think that there is some inherent pressure in there that will ultimately probably pull more campuses apart. So I don't know. What do you guys think about that? Do you see that as a trend? Do you think, or do you think I'm just being negative? It's the end of the year. I need to have, you know, a little more eggnog or what do you think?
I think there's some truth to it. We 5 years ago had a Spanish speaking. We didn't call it a campus. We called it One Church, Two Expressions. And we had a Spanish speaking, I'll call it campus now, that met on our Anaheim campus, which is now our broadcast campus. And, about 3 years ago, we launched it as its own church, but largely driven in that case by facility issues and competition and using the facility that just wasn't working out to the advantage of both churches. And there were, you know, some other things too, but we really hoped to keep that together, but we just couldn't. And I think in that same spirit, we're going to see some campuses just do the same things for their own pragmatic reasons. And both parties will decide that that's the best for both. One of the predictions I have for 2019, I think feeds in that, and it's my last one. It's that I think we're going to see less ordained and more pipeline, you know, leadership pipeline driven leaders emerge. And that kind of ties into the denominational discussion we've been having as well. And I think that also may lend itself towards the reality of some of the sites maybe becoming their own churches at some point, because what's happening is instead of a pastor ordained by a denomination, we have people that are coming from different career disciplines from the secular market, and they're becoming Christ followers, and they're moving through our own leadership pipelines. And their credibility is not coming from the fact that they were ordained by a denomination. It's coming from they rose into leadership and functioned in this role at such and such a church. Mm. And then as different leaders that have that leadership moxie, both from their secular experience and then from a well-formed leadership pipeline, which I won't go into ours because I did it in another podcast that we did together a few months ago, but it's they'll have that kind of credibility and equipment. And eventually that equipment may drive them to either they're going to, you know, start other campuses for us and not stay at the one that they're at, or it may mean that their leadership development has come to a point where it really is the best thing for this church to become autonomous now under that person. And if that's the way it goes, it's either one is a kingdom win, either one is. Mm-hmm. But I think that one of the things that will play into it as one of many factors is we'll see less ordained leaders and more leadership pipeline leaders in 2019 and beyond.
Very cool. Cool. Well, do you guys, we're coming near the end of our time. I'm wondering, Natalie or Ben, are there any others we want to squeeze in here, you know, as we round up the end of the episode?
I think another, you go for it, Natalie.
No, please, after you, Ben.
How about I just ask everyone to talk at the same time? Natalie, why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, sure. So I alluded to it at the beginning of this podcast, but I think there's going to be an increase in ministry opportunities around the concept of loneliness. We know that loneliness is a crazy epidemic that is completely inundating our culture. our most highly connected culture of all time is struggling so deeply with loneliness. In fact, a study was done that showed that the two major tiers of age groups that experienced loneliness were those kind of over the age of 65 and under the age of, I think it was either 21 or 18. And so they're the most lonely age and stages. And so I think that there's going to be some ministry opportunities surrounding that. I think it's going to be pushing the church to cross generational lines so that there's great connection points there. I mean, we see it in different spheres. There are nursery schools or daycares that connect in with seniors' homes and even operated of seniors' residences and things like that. I think that we're going to see that kind of fused into the church and look for ways to intentionally target people who have experienced, are experiencing kind of like just mass societal loneliness because of the way that we have set up our culture.
Interesting.
Also, as a quick aside, my 7-year-old daughter is here and she is dying to say hello on the podcast.
Oh, she absolutely. Why have you waited this long?
Quick, say hello.
Hi.
What's your name?
Hey.
And Aaron, what's your favorite thing in the world that you love?
My kittens.
Your kittens. Jesus. My kittens and Jesus. There you go. All right. Sorry, Ben.
No, no, just one thing before we go there. Your mom is kind of a big deal. And so I know, like, to you, it's just like she's your mom. Like, she's, she just is like, oh,
yeah, I gotta get that.
But she's amazing. She's incredible. And we just love her dearly and think she has so many good things to say. And we're just so honored that we get it, that you share her with us to,
yeah,
to be, you know, on the podcast.
Thank you.
Now, Ben, good luck trying to share. To
that is a hard that. Act to follow, Natalie.
Sorry,
that adorable pecker is too much. Oh boy, boy. The last thing I'll leave us with is just the succession plan. Like, obviously, the succession plans have been going on with a lot of aging boomers over the past, you know, 5 years. That isn't anything new. But I, you know, got some big prominent ones with Keller at Redeemer, Willie at Church in the Move, and so those ones are out there and kind of known. But there, I know there's a lot of succession plans that are in the works, kind of in the background for a lot of these mega churches. I think my prediction is this: there's a lot of pastors who, because they haven't seen enough of these happen successfully yet, they're still holding on to leadership when they possibly should be letting go and passing the baton to someone else. So my prediction and the trend is for a lot of these pastors to move into this, because, and I think it's going to accelerate over the next couple of years, and we're going to see a flood of megachurch boomer pastors pass the baton successfully to somebody else. Is that, that's my prediction. And then that's like, that's a positive. I think that's a great trend that we're going to see. A negative aspect of the whole succession plan, not to be a Debbie Downer here, like you said, Rich, but it just to touch on the fact, just the high profile case with Bill and Willow and how that did not go successfully this past year, and the additional issues that was going on in that community as well. That I think, and this is like, I'm thinking off the top of the head here, I think in relationship to that, I think there's going to be a lot of churches that respond to that and possibly overreach and over course correct, and how they have their men and their female and male employees interact with each other and treat each other and the boundaries, and maybe possibly too many boundaries because of that, to try to course correct and to safeguard our sinful nature, which is impossible to do. So I think that's a negative possible trend coming up in 2019, which would then, the ramifications of that are pretty clear. If females can only have conversations with men in a group environment, then it limits the leadership pipeline for a lot of females if there aren't other females established on staff in that leadership position, which I see as a negative trend. And I've been thinking about it myself in terms of my direct reports. How do I give them equal access to me as my male counterparts so that they have that and they don't get bottlenecked or their career path doesn't get truncated because of their gender? That's something I'm personally wrestling with, and I hope I do it successfully, but I'm concerned about it.
I'm cheering for you, Ben.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good, you know, it's an interesting you know, way to end, even, because you think, you know, these prediction episodes, you just really never know what's going to happen. I would have never thought that we would find ourselves at the end of this year in that scenario where that I had been cheering for, you know, Willow specifically and being like, man, this is going to go so well. You know, we're going to get a chance to learn. And then it's like, gosh, we've learned a whole other set of lessons. And, you know, what does that mean? And in some ways it feels like a renewed kind of, in some ways, like, and I'm, you know, like a step backwards from, you know, on a bunch of those levels. And so that's good. I really appreciate you flagging that. Well, friends, I appreciate you tuning in and being here. 2019, we're super excited to serve you. We're just getting started here at the All About Multisite podcast. And so we've got great episodes planned coming up. And I would love for you to please make sure you send us your questions. We'd love to do that. Again, you can just record them, email them to me, rich@unseminary.com. We've got some fun stuff on the Unseminary side coming up in 2019. I know we're just a few days away from that starting, but we've got a whole onslaught of really cool resources that are launching here in January and February. So keep an eye out for that. Greg, we've got your courses open. What are the things you want to make sure you tell people about? If people want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Well, if you want to go to Climbing the Assimilators, or the URL is greatcurtis-assimilation.com, there's a contact button right at the top, and I would love to interact with you by email. You could send me an email that way. If you scroll down, take the video course. I'll tell you what, I just decided this now. I'll give your listeners our listeners a 10% discount if they use the Sherpa 10 code.
Come on.
Yes. And that'll be good through January 6th. January 6th, Sherpa 10 code.
Yeah, I didn't use that when I bought mine. No, I'm just kidding. I haven't bought it yet. So. But you should, people. It's worth it. It's an incredible course. I really would encourage you to pick it up. You know, I obviously think a lot more on the kind of church growth side. How do we open the front door? But I really do think that Greg is one of the clearest head of thinking, or the clearest head of thinker on this whole, how do we get people assimilated? And it's a great deal. It's super cheap. I can't believe how much you're packed into that thing. So that's fantastic. I think you should go over there and check that out. What about you, Ben? How can people get in touch with you? What's coming up you want to make sure people are aware of as we go into the new year?
Make sure that you stay in the gym for more than a week as you get back to it, everybody.
Yes,
Come on. You can reach out to me, benstapley.info. Mm-hmm. I'll reach out to find me on social media at Ben Stapley. I'd love to connect with people there.
Nice. And Natalie, you've got a book coming up this year that we'll get a chance to talk about later in the year, but we're looking forward to that. That's coming up here in 2019. But other ways, if people want to track with you, this is a good time of year to add new people to your social media feeds and all that. How can people follow along with what's happening with you at the Meeting House?
Yeah, they can find me on Twitter at Natalie Frisk, for all of my friends that are still on Twitter, bless you. Let's make it a positive place in 2019. And you can also email me at natalie.frisk@themeetinghouse.com. Or if you want to check out our curriculum, you can easily access it at curriculum.church. I am actually just entering into a sabbatical time for the next 4 months. So I'll definitely be touching base with you guys, but you'll be some of my only ministry connections in that time. So,
I'm going to be
chilling and working on starting my Doctor of Practical Theology. So that's nice. 2019 for me.
That's good. That's better than mine. I have my Doctor of Impractical Theology.
So. Yes, of course. The DIP.
Yeah, super excited about that, Natalie. And again, thanks so much, friends. I've really appreciated it. I've loved this. These episodes this year have been so great to gather with you. And we've honored that so many people have been listening in and tuning in. And we're just honored that you are trying to reach people in your community and you're seeing multi-site as a way to do that. We hope that this has been helpful. Let us know what we can do to try to make these even more helpful for you as we head into next year. So thanks so much, friends, and we'll talk to you later. Take care.